Chapter 26. The Library. In Georgia, the Mason family's ancestral home had been renamed, indeed rebranded, and was now referred to as an estate, not a plantation. Once named Pride of Georgia, and subsequent to the abolition of slavery, the shrewd Mason family elected to move with the times. In 1867, the old plantation name was taken down from over the main entrance and replaced with something more politically correct. The sign now read, The Magnolia Estate. The original cotton plantation was now landscaped with cultivated gardens, fountains and orchards. The old buildings, where once a dozen thoroughbreds were stabled, had been converted to a large garage facility, housing a small fleet of high-end vehicles, and the living quarters, where over 100 slaves once existed, had been replaced by a small helicopter landing pad, control room and maintenance workshop. At the side of the helipad stood a brand new Jet Ranger helicopter. The huge white house itself was, to say the least, imposing, with its gleaming columns and the drive up to it flanked by over a dozen magnolia trees resembled Tara in Gone with the Wind. The Mason family had owned the original plantation since before the American Civil War and after the abolition of slavery. The house and estate had reverted to no more than an opulent house within beautiful grounds. Every male member of the Mason dynasty had entered and become successful in the military. In 1865, his great-great-grandfather was killed at the Battle of Gettysburg. His grandfather fought in Europe during World War I, and his father was in the first wave to land on Omaha Beach on D-Day. General Alexander Stonewall Mason was the latest in this great bloodline. His career after university had begun at West Point Military Academy, and after entering the Marine Corps as a lieutenant, rose quickly through the ranks, thanks to hard work, determination, and the Mason family name. His reputation as an outstanding but occasionally reckless officer grew in Vietnam. In Operation Desert Storm, he commanded his men alongside General Norman Schwarzkopf, and Mason was one of the first Americans into Baghdad following the defeat of Saddam Hussein. His illustrious career continued and ended in Afghanistan, after which, with the support of his wife's influential family, he turned to politics. Mason had made many powerful friends during his short diplomatic career, and as a US senator had become a formidable politician and diplomat. The last year, however, had been spent canvassing successfully for the presidency. The sun was setting over the tree-covered hills to the west of the estate. The big patio doors were open, and the perfume from the evening jasmine filled the room with its distinctive aroma. The library resembled an English gentleman's club, resplendent with polished wood panelling and shelves stacked from floor to ceiling, holding thousands of fine leather-bound tomes. A marble fireplace, reputedly brought from Europe, dominated the room, and above it hung a life-size portrait of Mason's great-great-grandfather, Augustus. Two huge leather sofas faced each other in front of the fireplace, and several high-backed wing chairs were spread around the elegant space. Fresh flowers on small antique tables softened the overtly masculine domain, their scent overpowered by the heady fragrance from the jasmine. In his early 60s, Alexander Mason was an imposing figure. Tall, slim, with a full head of silver hair and eyes that sparkled yet showed little emotion. He was well-educated and smart, but lacked any sense of humour. As an officer, he'd been respected, almost revered, by the men who had served with him, and his bravery and leadership were legend, all of which added to his charismatic presence. Mason, dressed in an evening suit, stood with one hand on the high mantle of the fireplace, in the other he held a large Monte Cristo. As he puffed at the cigar, the grey-blue smoke floated upwards and dissipated above his head. The other man also wore an evening suit and was seated on the big sofa, sipping from a crystal brandy balloon. As he swirled the amber liquid, he sniffed at the rim of the glass. Mason moved from the fireplace and sat opposite his guest. "You've done well up to now, but yesterday's fiasco was unacceptable." The man took a gulp of the fine cognac and looked sheepishly over the rim. "I agree, General. The situation did get slightly out of control. but the target was eliminated and the backup ensured our man was not captured, sir. Mason took another deep draw on the cigar and watched the smoke drift upwards. Yes, yes. About this intervention, as you put it. These two people, this man and woman, they seem to have a great interest in our business and a lot more knowledge than we would like. What can you tell me about them? Not much at the moment, but I've made arrangements to have them removed from the equation, General. I'm not sure that would be wise until we know all about them. I think you need to find out all they know before they are, as you say, removed from the equation. Of course, sir. My plan is to resolve this interruption quickly and then focus our energies on finding Colonel Nelson. The heavy door opened, ending their conversation. The two men stood as Elizabeth Rhodes Mason approached them. Gentlemen, enough talking. It's time for dinner. Mason laid the cigar in a big crystal ashtray and smiled at his wife. Elizabeth, yes, of course. Sorry, my dear, we're coming now. Then, turning to the other man, let me know how things go. The man smiled. Yes, of course, General. The woman stopped abruptly, a stern look on her face. General? Then her look softened and a broad smile appeared. Mr. President, if you don't mind. They all laughed.